The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
It's Field Yates and Joe Fortenbaugh hanging out with you in place of Max on this wonderful Tuesday afternoon in late December. And the Buffalo Bills are riding high after an impressive, dominant 38-9 thrashing of the New England Patriots on Monday Night Football in Week 16. And that has us all wondering today, are the Buffalo Bills a Super Bowl contender? And who better to ask than a Pro Football Hall of Famer and a Bills legend? His longtime Buffalo Bills wide receiver, Andre Reed, joins us now via the Shell Penslow Performance Line. Andre, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here in the Max Kellerman Show. What's the ceiling for this Buffalo Bills team right now in 2020?
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. The ceiling is as high as they want it to be right now. I think the dominating performance last night against the Patriots, they haven't beaten the Patriots twice in a year since Tom Brady, Tom Brady was there, and they never did that. So they've done some things this year that maybe a lot of people weren't expecting them to do, but I think you got to give a lot of credit to the front office and what they did as far as picking the head coach 4 years ago. Brandon Bean has done a great job in free agency and picking up the guys that they need and building a team. Obviously, Stephon Diggs has been a big plus for them this year. Definitely, he's in the room as far as a player of the year candidate. I mean, Michael Thomas won it last year. So Josh Allen's in the room as far as an MVP candidate. And Sean McDermott's in the room as far as a coach of the year candidate this year. So they are working right now all on every piston is firing. The cylinders are all moving forward. And I think is for Bills fans, this is what they envision. And especially in the building there, there at One Bills Drive, this is why they brought Sean McDermott in. And this is why they brought Brandon Bean in there to be the general manager. And they are playing very confident football. And if you look at the top three teams right now in the AFC, and not necessarily this order, I think the Bills are playing the best football. And then you have, the top three teams in the league, then you have not the AFC, but you have the Green Bay Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they're the top three teams right now in the league.
Andre, Sean McDermott, as a head coach, has only coached two playoff games in his career. Josh Allen, as a quarterback, has only appeared in the postseason one time. Field and I were going back and forth on this earlier. Does that matter?
Yeah.
Does that lack of playoff experience pose a problem for the Bills?
It does. There's no doubt about it. I think anytime you have a team and players that, even if they come from other teams and they get on a team and they're in the playoffs, that experience, it's like anything. I think experience, know-how, how do you prepare for the week, how do you go, all these little small things when it's playoff time really come into play when somebody has been there before. And I'm not saying the Bills are lacking in that. Obviously, they are to a certain point. But, yes, Josh Allen has played in one playoff game. McDermott has coached in two playoff games or whatever. And I think they've learned. You know, it really only takes one or two times to figure something out, especially if it's not only hard to get there, but to compete at that level and then win a playoff game. That's hard to do. I mean, I played in 21 playoff games, and not too many guys get to play in one. So I think this team is primed. They have confidence beyond belief right now, and they got one more game to play in Miami. They could sew up the number two seed permanently next week against Miami in Buffalo. And it's really up to Sean and what he wants to do as far as resting players and playing players and going into the playoffs and kind of going in with momentum. So I think he's going to play players. I think he's not going to really sit back and say, all right, let me rest these guys. I think he's going to ride this train and take his chances because they might be playing a game the next week. So it's pretty obvious that he does, to me, that he plays all the players as much as he can.
Joined now by Pro Football Hall of Famer and Bills legend, Andre Reed. And Andre, the NFL is different this year than it was even last year in a lot of ways, but including the fact that there is just one team that earns a bye this season in each conference. It's the Chiefs in the AFC, and we'll find out in the NFC. There are three teams that still have a shot. What do you think is the bigger edge that the Chiefs would have against the Bills if they do face, which, as we know, most likely would be in the AFC Championship game? Is it the fact that the game would be playing at home, or is it the fact that the Chiefs would have just played only one playoff game to advance to the AFC Championship?
I think it's all that. Plus, if you add in familiarity, they played already this year, so they do have film on each other as far as playing each other. The home field advantage, I mean, if you ask the players this year because of COVID and no fans at the games, I mean, the Chiefs have had fans at the games. I don't think that really was a big factor in teams winning games this year. The biggest factor was players not being able to play because of COVID. You look at Denver and some of these other teams, Denver had to play a guy that never played quarterback. And then I think the Browns just had a bunch of guys out. So that was really, to me this year, the biggest factor as far as teams being full go with all their players at certain times this year. And, you know, the Chiefs are the top dog on the hill. 14-1, you know, wrapped up the AFC West Championship. They got a bye. So they have the edge as far as that's concerned, because there's only one team that gets a bye in each conference. But the familiarity is good. I mean, they played a couple weeks back, maybe about a month ago on a Thursday night. And, That's going to be a big factor if they do, both teams do happen to play each other in the championship game this year, is looking at each other the way they played each other a couple weeks back or a month back.
Bills Mafia, like any fan base headed for the postseason, is going to start to look at the potential first-round matchups and what could be an easier matchup, what could be perceived as a more dangerous matchup. Not sure what combination of events this weekend would lead to this, but Buffalo versus Baltimore. What do you make of the Ravens this time of year? Because a lot of people seem to think they're going to be a dangerous out.
Well, anytime you have Lamar, it's dangerous. You just don't know. I think this year has been a different year for the Ravens on both sides of the ball. It really isn't supposedly Lamar-esque from his MVP year 2 years ago. But the Ravens, I think, have a core of players that have helped Lamar this year. Offensively, defensively, all that. Dez Bryant, everybody said he was dead and out of the water, but Dez Bryant has brought a little of excitement back to their offense. They probably have to run the ball a little bit better, like every other team in the playoffs. Running the ball is always a important thing, but they're dangerous. They're always dangerous, with Lamar back there. So whether or not that's going to be a matchup, coming a couple weeks or 2 weeks with the Bills or not, they probably will act accordingly to whatever it is. You always have to stop a guy like Lamar and limit him as much as possible. Make him throw and to beat you instead of run to beat you. But it should be interesting, whoever it is. It's going to come down to this last week of who the Bills may play. I mean, there's four teams that are in the vibe to play in the playoffs for the AFC this year, as far as the Colts and the Steelers and all this other stuff, they're already in. But there's a couple teams that might be on the out looking in, or vice versa.
You mentioned just a moment ago, Andre, the three best teams in the NFL right now look like the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Packers. Everybody at home can decide their own order. They also happen to have the three leading MVP candidates, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, and Josh Allen. If you were to cast a vote, and listen, you can be a homer if you want. You played for the Bills for, 15 years.
Course.
You're allowed to say whatever you want, man. But how would you stack up those three MVP candidates? Because this feels like one of those years where the person that doesn't win number two, number three, could be like the MVP frontrunner in like 8 of the last 10 seasons. It's been three great seasons.
Yes, and I think you hit the nail on the head, man. These three quarterbacks not only command their teams, but they're the franchise of their team. Mahomes is a franchise there in Kansas City. Aaron Rodgers has been doing it for how many years in Green Bay? And Josh Allen, who has had a magical season because they picked him. He was the 7th pick or the 15th pick a couple years back and they molded him into being that player that Buffalo needs up in that area. You got to have a blue-collar guy. You got to have a guy that he went to Wyoming. He's played in snow. I mean, all these little scenarios that we look at. So, you know, I don't know. I just think that if I had to, of course, I'm going to be the homer. I'm gonna pick my guy. I'm going to pick Josh because of what he's done, how he has really took that team on his shoulders and made everybody better. I mean, Aaron Rodgers had done it before. Mahomes did it last year. So, you know, I'm going to give the guy that hasn't done it in the past couple years, you know, the nod here. And, of course, I played with the Bills, so that gives me another notch in the belt. But all three of these guys have really done great jobs at their teams this year. And they made their teams better. They make their teams better on in every phase. Obviously, Mahomes is the reigning MVP and Super Bowl champ and whatever else. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers is the consummate pro. He's won a Super Bowl. He's that guy that's going to be there all the time. And Josh Allen kind of is the newcomer. So I'm going with the newcomer, guys. That's it, the bottom line.
I love it. Hey, and you know what? You're part of Bills Mafia forever as one of the greatest players to ever play for that great franchise. You can vote for Josh Allen
this year.
Heck, he could have 30 touchdowns and 50 interceptions next year, and you can vote for him again. Andre Reed, we appreciate you joining us here on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. Good luck to your Bills the rest of the way. Very exciting times in Western New York.
Definitely. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me. Anytime you want me to talk, just let me know.
We'll hold you to that. We really appreciate it. It's always good to have Hall of Fame perspective. You know, Joe, you and I, we might be Hall of Famers in the minds of, like, you know, your kids or my wife. But besides that, we're just sort of regular old guys here at ESPN. So always good to have the perspective of a gold jacket man like Andre Reed. And, you know, this Bills team, we've been talking about them all day. And this is not an overreaction to last night. Because what we saw last night, Joe, is a team that completely, like, I think the way I wish I had framed this earlier to Mike Reese when we had the Patriots reporter with us here on that was actually on Greeny last hour, was last night the Bills looked like to the Patriots what the Patriots had looked like to the Bills for basically the past two decades straight, a team that was simply more talented, but beyond that, out executed, heck, situationally better, right? I mean, the Bills pulled a, I don't know if it was a fake punt, but they threw a pass on a punt formation last night after the Patriots brought both of their vices in. Just good situational awareness from the Buffalo Bills. This team is not a fluke. This team has been showing it now. They've lost one game in the past 2 months, came on the Hail Mary. This feels like a team that's here now. And also, Joe, like, I don't think it's too soon to wonder whether this team's going to be around for a while, too.
Five straight wins by an average of 17 points per game.
Yeah.
Each of their last six wins has come by double digits. Like you said, the only thing preventing them from a nine-game winning streak is a Hail Mary in Arizona about 7 weeks ago. That's it. What you're seeing right now are the fruits of the labor, right? Everyone, it's easy to see this now. These are the results. The Buffalo Bills are playing well. Josh Allen's playing well. This is an exciting team. But look at the message that can be sent to so many other organizations. I'm looking specifically at Jacksonville because they're about to go through this when they draft Trevor Lawrence. And I'm going to look directly at Cleveland too because this has been their biggest problem for the last decade plus. Buffalo has done three key things with Josh Allen when they drafted him as a first-round guy and said, you're going to be the franchise quarterback. Number one, continuity. This is the biggest problem in Cleveland, continuity. Sean McDermott has been his head coach all 3 years. Brian Daboll has been his offensive coordinator all 3 years. Brandon Bean has been his general manager all 3 years. The man is surrounded by the people who brought him in. He's had a chance to work with them. They haven't changed it up on him. That seemingly happens every 4 weeks in Cleveland prior to the arrival of Kevin Stefanski. How does a guy like Baker Mayfield have a chance? How does a guy like Sam Darnold have a chance when he has a different play caller, a different head coach every other year? This is what Alex Smith went through in San Francisco at the beginning of his career. So continuity. Number two, patience. You mentioned this earlier, Field. The guy didn't start off great. The first 2 years of the Josh Allen experience weren't fantastic years. There were questions about whether or not he could connect on the long ball, whether or not he could be the guy. But they stuck with him. Patience. Again, something so many other organizations struggle with. And number three, help. And that help came in the form of Stephon Diggs and building a quality offense around this kid. That's why they're having so much success right now.
It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio. Field Yates and Joe Fortenbaugh. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. So you just said the word patience several times. I wish I could say it 1,000 times. But, Joe, don't you feel like sometimes it's not the players we have to tell to be patient? It's not the coaches. It's not the general managers. It's two constituencies. It's two bodies. The fans and the owners. Because doesn't it feel like it's the owners that oftentimes are growing impatient? Because what happens is that they use outliers to skew expectations. They see a Patrick Mahomes who fires out of the gates in his first full season as a starter and is the best player in football. Literally, MVP. They see Lamar Jackson in his second NFL season. Unanimous MVP. And they forget that, like, so frequently it's a slower burn than that, right? I mean, the Packers sat Aaron Rodgers on the bench for 3 years before he even played games of consequence. I understand Tom Brady was a rapid rise once he got the Patriots starting gig, but he was a six-round pick. These guys had to earn their stripes. It takes some time here. Patience pays off in sports. It is just incredibly fleeting. It is just so incredibly fleeting to see how infrequently owners, like, what is it going to take for them to change their mindset? Or have we reached the point now, because I think the era of social media, so many people have a voice, that owners are simply hearing too much, seeing too much, and reading too much, that we're never going to have patience ever again.
I think that plays into one group you left out. When you talked about the owners and the fans, the media as well. Mm. The media lacks patience. And when the media has a following, the media has the ability to not only communicate a message to that fan base, but also to communicate a message to the ownership. That can skew the equation as well. That can speed up timelines. That could put you in a situation where you lack the patience. Philadelphia right now, what do you do with Carson Wentz? The New York Jets right now, what are you going to do with Sam Darnold? The Baltimore Ravens, remember something. Lamar Jackson's eligible for a new contract this offseason, Field. Are you going to give Lamar Jackson $35 to $40 million a year if he doesn't have another, if he has another flame out in the postseason? Not to say it's all his fault, but a lot of decisions have to be made. Where are you patient and where do you have to cut ties?
Yeah. It's remarkable. It really is. And in the NFL, it's, you know, they always say the not for long league, but I wish patience were more a thing. And your point about how the media has a following, and at that they have sort of a persuasive arm, right? I mean, Twitter, and, you know, look at how many analysts are making the transition or at least being considered for general manager jobs, right? Like, that tells you just how much owners are watching, right? And these people have earned it too, right? But we're seeing that that's not an uncommon thing. John Lynch goes from the Fox broadcast booth to the 49ers general manager. Worked out really well for them, by the way. But it's just a reminder that, you know, owners are more, I think, in tune with the court of public opinion than ever because of all the different arms available for people to have an opinion. It's no longer just the opinion of the general manager and the coaching staff that matters. It's the opinion of millions that seems to matter to owners at all level. It just seems to be one of those times where you can't just be good. You got to be good in a hurry. And fortunately for the Bills, they're willing to be patient for 2 whole years for Josh Allen to pay off in a major way. He now looks like, you know, if you were to redraft that 2018 draft class of quarterbacks, 5 guys in the first round, I feel like it's kind of a no-brainer, right? Like, it was just scary to think that Lamar Jackson would now be number 2, but you'd probably have to lean towards Josh Allen based on how he's played this year, right?
Knowing, you know what? Let's talk again after the playoffs, because that's what it's going to come down to. With Jackson, I'm willing to give Jackson a pass these first 2 years, but this is going to be a huge year for Lamar Jackson because, again, can you bring a team from behind to win a football game?
Yeah.
That's what we need to see. Yeah. I would find myself siding with Allen right now just because of what he's been doing this season. I'm probably a victim of recency bias there.
Right. It's probably a good idea to just, like, maybe give it a couple of years before we make that decision one way or the other. Coming up next here on the Max Kellerman Show, the first week of the NBA season is now in the books. And there's some stuff that doesn't really matter, and there's some stuff that does. We dive into what's real and what's not real next here on ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
We're back on the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and simulcast on ESPN Plus, and we are presented by Progressive Insurance. Field Yates and Joe Fortenbaugh hanging out with you here in place of Max, and we have been aces on all of our rejoined audio cuts from Bubba behind the glass. It's time now for Straight Talk Wireless, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Well, actually, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, is what I was trying to say. Good thing when you're a radio host and you're very articulate, or when you're less than articulate, it's not so good. But I digress, Joe Fortenbaugh. We are now about a week into the start of the NBA season, an NBA season that will unquestionably be unlike any other. And sometimes what happens early in the year in any sport is you start to draw conclusions and then you realize it's fool's gold. There are other times where you say things early on in the season and it proves to be right. So I'm not going to sit here and get too far into, you know, the Minnesota Timberwolves starting with a few impressive wins, right? The fact that the Toronto Raptors are 0-2 out of the gates. I'm not ready to call any team that I thought was going to be very bad very good, and I'm not ready to decry the merits of a slow start, or I should say buy into the merits of a slow start for somebody like the Toronto Raptors. But as I think about stuff that I believe to be real and not real from the first week of the NBA season, the first thought that I have is that the NBA does not always have super teams, but it has had a lot of them recently. I don't know. One thing that I keep thinking about is that we keep seeing these goofy, upside-down results in the NBA in the first few nights of the season, and I don't think it's a mistake. And what I'm getting at is that there's now 72 games in this year's regular season, down from the customary 82. Obviously, that's a COVID concession the league and the players had to make. I do not suspect that we are going to see what would be the equivalent of a 60-win team during a 72-game season. Not a math guy, but let's say it's like a 55 or whatever it would be win team. This year, what we're going to see is parity. We're going to see players resting more than ever, not just because of the condensed schedule that has more back-to-backs, but also because teams realize that anything could happen at any moment. We're having COVID restrictions. We had the Rockets be cut down to whatever it was, 8 players in their first game after having their other first game delayed because of COVID. I just don't know that we're going to be able to say, based off of a team's record at the end of this regular season, okay, those are clearly the 2 to 3 most dominant teams in the NBA. Eye test is going to matter more than ever in the NBA this season, because for as good as the Brooklyn Nets looked, for example, in their first two games, they're now 2-2. And part of that is because you've got KD and Kyrie Irving not playing on the second night of a back-to-back. It's going to be one of those years this year.
I would not disagree with you, because I think there are two factors that are playing into exactly what you're saying. Number one, due to COVID, we're likely heading for another playoff scenario where home court advantage isn't going to matter to the extent it has in the past because of the fans.
Mm-hmm.
So if home court advantage doesn't matter, why are you in a race to get the 1 or 2 or 3 seed when the 5, 6, or 7 will suffice? And that plays into the ever-evolving efficiency of NBA players and teams. This is essentially load management on a macro scale. And I know people hate that phrase because it means superstar athletes making millions of dollars aren't going to be playing on a regular basis. But these guys are smart. They understand that the difference between the 2 and 3 seed and the extra work that goes into that, maybe rest the body. Make sure you are physically ready to peak and be at your healthiest, or as healthy as you can be, by the time you get to the playoffs. Because we have seen far too many teams and far too many championship dreams get dashed because teams ran out of gas. James Harden's a guy who's accused of that in the series against the Warriors 2 years in a row when they missed 27 straight three-pointers in a closeout game. That's a scenario that teams are looking to avoid. They want to peak in the playoffs. They don't want to limp into the playoffs field. So I think you're right. What's the value of winning 55 or 58 games if you're out of gas versus 48 wins and you're ready to roll from night one in the opening round?
Think about some of the bizarre outcomes we've already seen so far in the NBA. And we're a week into it, right? Some of those include the Clippers at what point being down 50 to the Mavericks at halftime, the largest halftime deficit, I believe, in NBA history.
Correct.
We've seen all kinds of goofiness take place. I mentioned how teams that you'd expect to be red hot are not coming out of the gates. The Denver Nuggets, a slower start than expected. The Lakers are 2-2 right now. Who would have thought they'd be 2-2? The Bucks.
The Knicks beat the Bucks. The Knicks hammered the Bucks over the weekend.
The Golden State Warriors. Now, I said I didn't want to make this about specific teams. But, Joe, in your previous stop, you were a radio host for 6 successful seasons, years, I should say, in the Bay Area. That's a team that has me a little bit nervous. And here's the reason why. We were talking about the economics of this before the show. Now, the Warriors can do nothing about the incredibly bad luck that Klay Thompson has experienced specific to that Achilles tear this offseason. But after Klay's injury, the team still went ahead and made moves, specifically the Kelly Oubre trade, to try to bolster this team this year. As of December 8th, and I apologize if there have been a couple of subsequent, you know, minor tweakings of the roster that may impact this number, their luxury tax bill was $147 million. $147 million. You take the other teams in the top 10 of luxury tax this year, you combine all of their luxury tax bills, and you add $36 million, and you get the Warriors. Think about it. Just an unfathomable amount of money to be paid. They're 1-2, and they cannot play defense worth a penny. That has me a little bit nervous. Like, that's one of those things that, like, 3 games into the season does not feel like a total overreaction. I know Draymond Green has not played, but we saw something close to this last year. Obviously, Steph got hurt early, broke his hand after 4 games, but this team, I don't know if, like, Steph Curry, unbelievable player, 2-time MVP. But it's interesting. It doesn't feel like Steph being the only engine that's clicking at full Voltron is going to be enough for the Golden State Warriors to be a real threat in the West.
When Draymond comes back, if Draymond comes back, because it wouldn't be the least bit surprising to see him traded at some point if this continues to get worse, but that might be a topic for another conversation, the defense will improve. James Wiseman has played fantastic, even though it's only been a handful of games.
Yep.
So there's some opportunity there. It's going to take some time for the new pieces to gel into the defense and the team and the mindset that Steve Kerr wants. But make no mistake about it, this is not the team from 2, 3, 4 years ago. This is not the same dynasty team. They're trying to find their way. That luxury bill, it's a lot of money. But it's also an ownership group led by Joe Lacob and Peter Guber who are willing to spend every last dollar to put themselves in a position to compete. And if you're a fan, you got to love that because I think we've all at some time or another been a fan of a team that refuses to spend money. They pinch pennies at every single term and the team can never get ahead. Like if you're a Green Bay Packers fan for years, as great as 12 has been, you look around thinking, how come we never spend in free agency?
Right.
How come we're never willing to bring in one, maybe two mid-tier to high-tier priced free agents to help this team out? That's what the Warriors are willing to do at the very least.
Yeah.
Whether or not it works out, they got a new building down there in Mission Bay that they're trying to sell out once they're allowed to put fans back in the seats field.
You know, it reminds me, by the way, Joe, in my previous work prior to ESPN, I worked for the Kansas City Chiefs. At one point, there was someone who came up from the business side who had worked in Europe for one of the soccer leagues, one of the major soccer leagues over there. And his one of his first sort of notes and observations was just that how many owners in professional sports in Europe owned soccer teams for the pleasure, right? Like, it was a ton of money, but they're doing it because, like, they're spending ungodly amounts of money because those men or women want to win championships, right? That's what they care about. They're willing to spend $75 million on a transfer fee, not even for the player to play, but just to have the player transferred to the club. Whereas in North America, typically there's a lot more financially driven decisions made. You want to, you know, the bottom dollar, the bottom line, I should say, is what matters most. A lot more in the NBA. A lot of season left, of course, but just a couple of thoughts that sort of piqued our mind. That's Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So the NBA, I just can't wait to see a little bit more ahead because there just feels like there's so much opportunity for so many teams in both conferences. You know, coming up next year on the Max Kellerman Show, who is the NFL Coach of the Year?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and simulcast on ESPN Plus. Field Yates and Joe Fortenbaugh hanging out in place of Max today. And the NFL has had so many good stories this year on an individual level. Alex Smith is certainly one that comes to mind. The growth of Josh Allen, the re-rise of Aaron Rodgers, if you will, but also on a team level. And when there are teams that are successful, it is at times catalyzed by great coaching. Joe Fortenbaugh, when he is not on here on the radio talking about the NFL, does a ton of great work covering gambling and betting and all things sort of what you think of when you go to a casino in Las Vegas, where he happens to call home now. So, Joe, let's dive into the NFL's Coach of the Year. And I want to sort of go through that alley to get there, because I was hoping that you could maybe give me the odds on who will be the NFL's Coach of the Year because it's such an incredibly tight race this year. There are so many good candidates right now.
Field Yates, a brilliant NFL mind, now going to be asked to take that brilliance and merge it with the world of gambling to see if he can make sweet, sweet radio love.
That's right.
All right, here's what we're going to do. Our partners at Caesars William Hill do not have odds on Coach of the Year. So we found these offshore. They were updated this morning.
Okay.
What I have are co-favorites, meaning there are two NFL head coaches who are tied as the favorite for Coach of the Year. The odds are plus 150, meaning a $100 wager that is successful will return $150 in profit. Plus 150. Who are the two head coaches who are currently the co-favorites for Coach of the Year?
All right, I'm going to go, and as people who, well, maybe people don't know this, but those who have spent some time dabbling in the gambling world probably do know this. You know, lines are constantly updated, so there is sort of a recency bias baked into the lines, right, or to the odds here in this case. I'm going to go with the two coaches that are coaching against each other this upcoming week, Sean McDermott and Brian Flores of the Bills and Dolphins, respectively.
If I had control over the Bellagio fountains right now, I would hit a button that would shoot the water as high into the sky as humanly possible, because you, sir, are correct. Brian Flores, Sean McDermott are your co-favorites for NFL Head Coach of the Year.
Okay, so, and we'll get into, after we get to the rest of these odds, we'll get into whether, like, you know, that they're accurate or not. Who will be next, or what's the next sort of little tier here?
All right, so Flores and McDermott are plus 150. $100 wager returns 150 in profit. Number two is 5-1, which means $100 wager returns 500 in profit. Number three is 8-1. $100 wager returns 800 in profit. Who's 5-1? Who's 8-1?
I'll go Kevin Stefanski, Browns, 5-1. I'll go Sean Payton, Saints, 8-1.
Kevin Stefanski is correct.
Okay.
Sean Payton, not correct.
Ooh,
or incorrect would probably be the more appropriate way to say that.
Potentially Andy Reid for the Chiefs.
He's the next tier down. The next tier down is going to be three individuals. Andy Reid is one of the three in that tier. And I'll give you a little spoiler. Sean Payton, not in that tier either.
Wow, the disrespect involved. Mike Tomlin, then, I would think, at 8-1. Maybe.
Mike Tomlin's in the tier with Andy Reid as well.
Wow, I'm way up. Ron Rivera?
Ron Rivera would be correct. He is at 8-1. So it's Flores and McDermott at plus 150. Stefanski at 5-1. Ron Rivera at 8-1. Andy Reid, Mike Tomlin, and one other individual at 12-1. Who is that final individual? I'll give you a hint. He is the head coach of a very, very good football team.
I was getting Matt LaFleur, right?
There you go.
Yeah, which feels
look at you.
But Matt LaFleur feels a little bit undersold there to me. So let me just, we only have a couple minutes here, so let's get into this.
Phil, you strike me a little bit as a Mike McDermott type from the movie Rounders.
There you go.
You look the part of a casual citizen, but you have a seedy nightlife, if I may guess.
You know, Joe, I've made a couple of donations to the great state of Nevada in my past. So we got a few minutes here, and I think it's important to note that, and this is something that I've talked about recently with Dan Graziano, so I really give the credit to him for this construct, is that, like, I think the NFL Coach of the Year should really be two awards. One should be the coach that does the best job with a really, really excellent team that we expected to be really good, right? Like, Andy Reid is not going to get any Coach of the Year votes, most likely, but his team is 14-1. There also should be a separate award for a coach whose team most exceeds the expectations cast by the masses coming into the season, which is where I think the Brian Flores conversation gets really compelling, along with Kevin Stefanski, right? But, like, people are going to poo-poo the case for Sean Payton or Matt LaFleur because their teams are step-for-step with where they were a season ago. So their candidacy is not nearly as strong. I think if we were to categorize the award twice, then I think the coach of the year for, like, a team at the very top that kind of has played around where you expect it to be, I kind of do think it's Sean Payton. All this time spent without Drew Brees, all these games without Michael Thomas, some difficult, unique circumstances, and there's a really good case there. But I think the category that's going to really be the real aligned category with the award itself is the coach that's team has most exceeded expectations. I think it's Brian Flores. I think it's Brian Flores. He's done such a great job with the Dolphins. A year ago, they were supposedly tanking. Things changed so fast, Joe. This, to me, feels like, you know, Brian Flores' award to lose. How about you?
Great points, great cases to be made. I find myself leaning to Sean McDermott because he's taken a Buffalo Bills organization that has been irrelevant and non-competitive for so long, and suddenly they're at the top of the heap. But I would say this. if you're making the case for Kevin Stefanski, you come right out and you say, this is the first year in 20 years we're not using the Cleveland Browns as a punchline in every joke. That right there deserves a hell of a lot of recognition.
Gosh, and here I am listening to Sean McDermott's case and Kevin Stefanski's case, and I'm thinking to myself, why wouldn't I pick them? So many good candidates will be a fascinating award to be handed out. Coming up next, is this the best Alabama team ever under Nick Saban? It's the Max Kellerman Show with Field Yates and Joe Fortenbaugh on ESPN Radio.
Max, the podcast.